Hello and welcome to the Euractiv Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Natasha Foot.
I'm Julia Dam.
And I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food News team.
So first of all, we're very happy this week to be rejoined by Tash, who we were missing dearly last time. It was quite weird to record with us.
Let's stop this fast. I mean,
keep going. I like it.
She was the guest last week.
Yeah, but I mean, did you not miss me dearly? Julia missed me dearly. What about you, Gerardo?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I was not convincing.
I introduced you as the soul of the podcast.
Oh, I know. I listened. I appreciate it.
Let's remember this.
Well, thank goodness I'm back. I'm never missing another episode. It broke my heart, so.
Don't commit to something. No, but honestly, not many podcast hosts could actually say that they were also guests of the podcast.
It's true. Wow, I have so many hats.
Yeah, goodness. Yeah.
I'm amazing.
I don't know. You also want to produce? I know you actually produced in the beginning.
I did. Yeah. I edited as well.
So yeah, it's
gosh.
Multitasked podcaster. But and actually, Tash came back to the Agri-Food Hub.
As the agri-food world was collapsing.
Yeah.
I have the impression that I left for 3 days. I was said, you know, I'm going for a few days. I took a slight hiatus as well from agri reporting. I was like, you know, 3 days. How much can change in 3 days? That's fine. Came back. Everything is exploding. Everything I thought was sure has just dissipated.
I was talking with other colleagues and we agreed that the Agri-Fish Council on Monday was one of the most important in the in the past years.
A lot going on.
And also with a very dense agenda. No? Mm. They talk about everything. Of course, I mean, it's a reaction considering what's happening in Ukraine, basically. But the impact has been, I'd say, even bigger than COVID.
Yeah, it's had huge, like very far-reaching ramifications on the agri-food sector.
Indeed, let's start with one of the biggest topics this week, the famous postponement. I say the famous because we joked on this on Twitter, but also on in our reporting, I'd say. Mm. The postponement of the SUD directive, the sustainable use of, that actually has become regulation. Yeah, that's another thing because, I mean,
I'm telling you, it's all changed.
Yeah. We anticipated, we had this leak some weeks ago and they basically told us that it's completely different now. Indeed, there's another leak circulating. Anyway, it's probably changed also the legal basis. Now it's a regulation, no longer a directive. So leaving more space to the member state. The problem is that the postponement has been denied by the commission.
We can't call a spade here in Brussels. It's not possible.
What's the correct term then?
I don't know. They didn't seem to commit to a term. Shall we hear from them in their own words what they said when I asked them about this at the press conference this week?
Yeah.
The date of proposals to be discussed and adopted by the college is only determined the previous day when the heads of cabinet meet and discuss to prepare the college agenda. So this shouldn't lead you to infer that we had postponed the proposal if you saw it as an indicative item to be discussed by the college at a certain date.
Yeah, that was a bit. Even the position of the commissioner Stella Kyriakides, the food safety commissioner at the Agri-Fish Council, was a bit ambiguous.
A bit ambiguous.
Yeah, she was saying something, and actually the minister, agriculture minister, De Normandie, try to extrapolate.
Yeah, he was our best ally there because we're all sitting there thinking, all right, so tell us what's actually happening. What date is being, you know, talk to us straight.
Kyriakides said that the date was not yet decided. like the, when the draft directive would be tabled
on the Monday.
And I'm quoting on the Monday for the Wednesday. Yeah. And I'm quoting here what she said. One could argue that the generalized geopolitical uncertainty at this point doesn't allow this proposal on the sustainable use of pesticides the political space it needs for further proper discussion and reflection.
Yeah. So what we're hearing is it's not coming on Wednesday.
Yeah. That's
what is not happening.
That's what the Normandy was referring to. She said, he said basically.
He gave it a good crack, didn't he?
So from what I understood, you're not going to present the pesticide framework.
And she still evaded.
Yeah. And then I also asked Commissioner Wojciechowski in the press conference this very question. So basically, if it's postponed or not. And he also replied with a very non-ambiguous, I mean, it was quite direct, but still he said, there's no pesticide discussion at the next college meeting.
Yeah.
There are EU specialized journalists reporting. There were in the same room, so they understood. But it's pure jargon because what does it mean? College meeting. College meeting is the meeting between all the commissioners on Wednesday, every Wednesday, in which they decide which kind of initiative they would communicate to the press, to the EU citizens, actually. So it was basically saying, we postpone it. Although, as we heard from Dana, it's not really a postponement, but
no word for what it is. It's not a postponement because they didn't definitely decide the date. So therefore, it's just that undecidedment.
Yeah,
it's not a word.
The point is now
outside of the time space continuum at the moment, this piece of law in the void.
The point is that now we don't really know when this pesticide directive will be unveiled.
Although it's true that Commissioner Stella Kyriakides, in her speech this week, speaking in Prague, did say that the commission would adopt a proposal on the sustainable use of pesticides in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very vague as well.
They learned from the previous experience. Never give a date. No, but the point is that the situation is quite hectic at the moment. So technically, there's not a problem with presenting the SUD or the SUR, whatever is the new legal basis. Because, I mean, it's a long-term strategy. So, again, it's not really a reason. But it's true that it could give a contradictory message. Because on Wednesday, when the SUD directive was supposed to be presented, there was the food security communication by the commission in which they also derogate on the use of certain pesticides. Wojciechowski was quite clear in this regard. They want to, at least for this year, try to produce
as much as possible, basically.
Technically, wherever, because they also derogated on the use of setting aside and also the use of fallow. So, I mean, it could have given some contradictory messages because with one directive or regulation, they push in one direction and at the same time they present some derogation.
Yeah, I definitely would have opened it up at least for a lot of criticism, I think, as well, for like mixed messages on the same day. Or
that's why you asked the question to the commission.
That's exactly why I asked the
question. Because, I mean, that's why the reason you postpone it. And there's nothing, again, they're a communication expert, so they have to cope with this kind of, they have to anticipate. The point is now, I mean, what is important, you know, putting aside the controversial aspects. It's when they're gonna, again, when they're gonna present it, because the situation is changing. There's the risk of yesterday we were at a meeting with some commission official. There's also the risk of stagflation, so stagnation and inflation, and this could technically have very long consequences. So if they didn't want to present anything at this time being on pesticide because of a contradictory message, there could also be a scenario in which the contest is not changed in the coming weeks. There's a leaked agenda of the commission says before summer. Before summer is another very vogue date, let's say.
Well, Commissioner Kyriakides also in her speech was saying about how she really counts on the Czech presidency to advance the work on this file.
Czech presidency. From July, actually. Because the current...
Doesn't sound like coming weeks to me, if that's the...
It's also true that in the moment they present... and actually, it's a very good hint.
Right, reading between the lines.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I mean, it's the added value of having Tash here instead of...
Instead of what?
Instead of having her in Greece doing other stuff.
And back.
No, it's true. So presidency means that French...
it's vague. She could also mean, you know, continuing to support it. It's open enough that it doesn't suggest that it's necessarily them. But those two things taken together.
It's also true that she happened to be in Prague.
No, I know. Yeah, she was in Prague. Exactly. So obviously it makes sense. But... You know what I mean?
Anyway,
that's enough of our musings on the postponement of this directive. But we actually spoke to a few people to hear their take on the postponement and what this means, the impact this could have. Let's hear from Marilda Descali. And so she's the EU Agriculture Policy Officer at BirdLife Europe to hear what she had to say.
So the delays to nature protection package that were announced will have an after effects for the future of agriculture, nature, and people. And the long-term sustainability of food system and peace is at stake. By doing so, the Commission is totally ignoring the calls of 13,000 citizens, 166 environmental NGOs, more than 400 scientists, and also many environmental ministers. And the Commission is postponing legislation meant to put us on the right tracks towards long-term solutions by using the ongoing war in Ukraine, which needs short-term actions. We know that the political procedures for new or revised legislation takes at least 1 or 2 years' time. And now is the time to have these discussions because we see how vulnerable our food system are. We cannot postpone their transformation. We need to make the necessary changes and adapt our societies to further crises. Continuing the dirty practices now with the hope that we will do the right things later somehow never works. This narrative is what's hindering us to take the right political decisions and actions. At a certain point, the Commission, the member states, will have to make bold choices and stop poisoning the ecosystems and humans. Restore nature and its functionalities, because there's the only way to be resilient. Otherwise, there's only chaos, famine, floods, droughts that is waiting for us.
And we also spoke with Olivier de Matos, who is the Director General of CropLife Europe, to hear his take on the postponement of the SUD.
First of all, I'd like to make clear that our industry has not been calling for a delay in the publication of the Sustainable Use Directive revision. We are eager to contribute to the discussions on the proposal once it's released. It would be another opportunity to exchange views and openly promote the innovative agricultural tools and technologies that will be essential for a sustainable and secure food supply. We understand the delay in the announcement, but we don't believe it's about shelving the sustainability agenda. Interim measures will need to be applied due to the war in Ukraine, but climate change remains a great threat to food security. Sustainability, biodiversity, and agriculture can and actually must coexist. If we can agree on this fundamental principle, then the remaining question is how. Of course, the war creates enormous uncertainty over the how. But that surely just makes the need to find solutions more urgent, rather than abandoning our efforts altogether. The fundamentals of the farm-to-fork strategy are sound, but to meet its requirements, farmers and their suppliers need a supportive EU regulatory environment for innovation to allow them to produce sufficient food sustainably. As an industry, we're doing our part. We are accelerating our efforts around innovation to provide solutions that will enable farmers to overcome lots of challenges. CropLife Europe is keen to engage in a broader dialogue and help provide the solutions.
And so we already hinted this week about the communication on the Commission's communication on food security. And so what happened in this communication this week, Gerardo?
Are you asking to me?
Yeah, I'm asking to you.
You actually do uncover it. Food security is basically the new keyword. Actually, we said that with Julia last week.
I heard.
So it's not new. Eh? People that are loyal to the Agri-Food podcast already know that. So basically, the Commission presented this new communication, which basically put together all the things that were reported in the past week. So basically, the measures that the Commission is going to adopt for relieving the burden to farmers and technically consumers. Now we're going to talk about that. Yeah. But the measures are basically private storage aid for the pig sector, the pig
that you've been talking about for a long time, really.
Yeah,
struggling sector.
Yeah, it's more of there's a correlation with Ukraine, but again, it's something that was already discussed since October. There are also other measures. This 500 billion fund, partially funded with the Crisis Reserve Fund, which is the first time that it's been triggered.
Which is a big deal, actually.
Yeah, it's also a bit controversial because in the end, you're basically subtracting some CAP funds to other sector in order to relieve other sector industries.
No such thing as a free meal.
Yeah, no, indeed. Indeed, yeah.
That'd be a good headline.
The interesting part is that all these measures are related to the food security aspect. And it was said, but it's written in the communication. It was said by Dombrovskis, the vice president attending the press conference, and by Wojciechowski, the agriculture commissioner, that the food security aspect will affect mostly third countries, not EU citizens. There are some very high concern when it comes to Tunisia, Egypt, country North Africa. There are highly dependent on Ukraine wheat, for instance, but even in the Balkans. But in the end, for this kind of, I mean, the EU is a net exporter of foodstuff. There's no such a problem in terms of food security for the EU, but there might be a problem in terms of food affordability for low-income people in the EU.
Which is, yeah, I mean, we have the food, but the poorest and the most vulnerable may be unable to access it. You know, that was the crux, I think, of the kind of the conclusion of the communication. I literally said, you know, food supply is not at stake in the EU today. Very, you know, literally in bold as well in the communication, which is interesting when you consider the enormous focus. I mean, I would say that the overwhelming focus really in the discussions, in the press conferences, even in the technical briefings, you know, beforehand was on increasing production. Still, you know, how can we make more food? Is you know, we talked about these derogations, There's derogations on the ecological focus areas, on growing as much as we spoke about just now, which is interesting if you consider the fact that they are saying that we're not going to have a food supply problem in the EU. I mean, obviously, I can understand it in the sense of compensating for loss elsewhere, which is, you know, what they've spoken about in North Africa. But it does seem to be that the main concern is that people are not going to be, just can't afford it with the like skyrocketing prices. They highlighted, especially for low-income households, for refugees, for incredibly vulnerable people. And so actually I asked the commission, you know, is, because some people are saying basically there's a misplaced amount of focus on production of food rather than trying to increase accessibility. And I asked the commission about this, and this is what Commissioner Wojciechowski had to say.
Thank you. And I can add only that's of course, this communication is dominated by the agricultural problems, and the problem how to increase agricultural production, food production, especially this year, because in this specific dramatic situation, we need more food in European Union this year, especially this year, because the lack of the import from Ukraine, because the problems with refugees, but we have additional consumers. Refugees are additional consumers in European Union. We need to deliver food for them.
And actually, we spoke with Pauline Constant from BUIC, so that's the European Consumer Organization, about this risk to consumers. And here's what she had to say.
Media headlines about the war in Ukraine's impact on food supply have left many EU consumers worrying about potential food shortages. We've recently seen scenes of consumers in several EU countries rushing to the shops to stock up on pasta, flour, and vegetable oils. But the Commission made it very clear, we will have enough food. As such, there is no need for consumers to hoard food. This will only serve to artificially empty supermarket shelves and push prices further up. Access to food is another issue, though. At times when energy bills are going through the roof, many consumers are at risk of not being able to afford food if prices keep going up. So we are glad that the European Commission encouraged governments to buffer consumers against food poverty through social policy and fiscal measures. It actually echoes some calls by consumer groups in Spain and Germany, for instance, who have respectively appealed to their governments to hand out food vouchers or apply 0% VAT on fruit, vegetables, and pulses. So now the ball is in the court of the member states, and we count on them to act swiftly. But let's be clear that food prices had started going up before the war. The Farm to Fork strategy can help keeping food affordable for all by reducing the EU's dependence on imports of energy, fertilizers, and feed. So let's not wait any longer for rolling it out. But let's be clear, food prices had started going up before the war. The Farm to Fork strategy can help keeping food affordable for all by reducing the EU's dependence on imports of energy, fertilizers, and feed. So let's not wait any longer for rolling it out.
Again, it's an interesting topic because we had some talk with the EU officials. Can we name them? No.
No, we can't.
Really?
I don't think so.
EU officials. and I basically asked, I mean, how to cope with the potential increase in problematic for this kind of low-income household. And the answer was quite, genuine. The European agricultural policy is a policy that the thing that could do are related to the production, are support to the production, even the subsidies, the coupled subsidies and kind of stuff. The only effect it could have are basically on the side of the production, no? It is well known. There are not so many tools when it comes to the social aspect. We know that they're trying to introduce this third pillar through the social conditionality in the next cap, starting from 2023. It's true that social conditionality is still something related to the production. I mean, it's the fair production, let's say. But there are some measures in the in-food communication, like some kind of reduction on VAT, which is basically the only thing that the EU can do, and suggesting the member state to have an eye, take an eye on the retail prices and so on. But other than that, the EU can do anything. It's the realm of member states. It's their competence. And I also asked some diplomat that I know that I can that I cannot mention. They basically told me that at a certain point we need to think about, in case this, the situation worsens, we have to think about where from where we could raise this money to, for instance, support the energy bill, but also the food bill. Kind of food bill of people affected if the Ukraine war will impact the final consumers. But again, it's good to say that at the moment, at this moment, the European agricultural policy doesn't have tool to address social policy aspects for consumers and for farmers too.
Doesn't yet have this third pillar.
The third pillar, yeah.
Indeed. It's interesting because it kind of ties into the, I mean, for a long time, NGOs and civil society have been calling more for a common food policy, right? That's supposed to be a more holistic, for a transition to a sustainable food system, you know, as opposed to the common agricultural policy. And I feel like it's an interesting...
Yeah, they wanted a commissioner for food. It's also true that before... the end of a commission they ask for a commission for everything. So I remember that some stakeholders also asked for the commission for well-being and all this kind of stuff. So but it's true that this was the main angle.
But it's interesting how the war has shown how food policy is really interrelated with all kinds of stuff. I mean, we already had this kind of geopolitical turn where people really were made aware of the geopolitical dimension of agriculture and food policy, and then we have the social policy interconnection that we see here.
It's really placing agriculture at the crossroads of all of our major issues, you know, economic, social, ecological.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I think we're in the agri-food world. We know that it's at the center of all of these, where all these, you know, issues join and mix, but I think it's becoming more obvious to everyone else as well at this point, even actually on, you know, security policy, because this week actually Janusz Wojciechowski, the agriculture commissioner, he was talking about how agriculture is becoming more and more security policy, not just defense, and even on, you know, he's compared it to energy as well, which is obviously clearly becoming a security, you know, seen through the eyes of security. He's saying agriculture is exactly the same thing. So it's kind of changing the way that people view the agri-food sector and the importance of it.
Indeed, we assume that energy include all these aspects, geopolitical, as Julia mentioned, or security aspects, as Tash was mentioning. But we don't assume the same for...
We should assume the same.
Well, we should assume, because actually, I mean, food prices are commodity markets. Yeah? So they are influenced by currency, and also, I mean, the food goods are very peculiar commodity. And again, geopolitical terms. I mean,
yeah, it's finding itself caught in the crossfire increasingly of every major geopolitical.
Of course. I mean, the
between different trade sanctions and export bans.
Before the 20th century, most of the wars were conducted because of food. No, I mean, food is
we're
a
really
resource.
Pushing, we're really pushing our own propaganda here. Like, we're important. You should read us. You should listen to us.
It's the agri-food promotion. No, guys, we are
important. Mutually and objectively.
Guys, agri-food is important. And particularly the agri-food journalists. The agri-food journalists. know what's going on, you know. So... No, but it's true, guys. I never had so many retweets
is that how you count it?
Yeah.
Important. Wow.
As when I tweeted something from Wojciechowski. They got I don't even remember the engagement, but it's close
to
the million.
You do remember the engagement. It's don't lie. You remember.
The engagement on Twitter, so the... Yeah,
oh my gosh.
All the retweets,
propaganda,
close to a million, and also, I mean, your story on the.
Oh yeah, bring me in as well. Yeah, yeah. Try and justify your self promotion.
No, but it's true that, for instance, it's what Julia also covered some weeks ago, the G7 meeting on agriculture. No, so it's. I mean, it's quite relevant now. So we're back.
We're cool.
Yeah, we're cool.
We're cool again.
We're cool. This
make is agri feed great again.
Okay, maybe this reference is a bit too much.
So far the flavors of the week have been a bit dominated by sweet things like chocolate with sugar, or at least one so you could put in desserts, or often go in desserts like cinnamon. So this week we thought it might be time to spice things up a little. So we're actually talking about pepper.
Ooh, not a dessert.
Spicy.
Well, it could be. Could go into chocolate, but usually not.
We were torn about the possibility to sing sugar, but then we decided.
You just did it.
Okay.
You might as well just follow through with it.
Okay. No.
But anyways, the reason that we're talking about pepper is also that this week marks actually a joyous occasion in the realm of pepper. And we have Gerardo to bring us all the info.
Yeah, what could that be, Gerardo?
Because if it's me, it's because of geographical indication, of course.
Your trademark.
It was the Penja pepper.
Penja pepper.
From Cameroon. I hope it's the right pronunciation. Because I normally check on some websites.
Are you saying you didn't do your homework?
No, I didn't. Thanks for making me feel bad about
You're
it.
You're welcome.
I don't think it's Penja, it's Penja. I mean, I live in the...
I think the least you say it, the better.
I know, I live in the African district of Brussels. So basically,
So you're an expert, are you?
No, I'm not an expert, but I hear the sound, no? Mm. I think that this is Penja.
All right, well, tell us about Penja then.
Penja pepper is a pepper.
That sounds like the start of a...
you probably remember that there was some kind of raise some years ago between which kind of African products would have been granted with the GI protection in the EU. And there was a race between rooibos, which is a
tea.
I love that tea. I mean, it's not a tea.
You point at me as if like the British one will know
the
all about
expert,
tea.
Yeah.
It's true.
But actually rooibos is more a Dutch special.
Yeah, it's true. Nice though.
The argan oil from Morocco and the Penja pepper. And in the end, the winner was rooibos.
Oh.
It was the first GIs recognized in the EU. But Penja pepper became the second one. This week, again, it was awarded with the geographical protection, which is basically the highest quality scheme in the EU, so it was a very good achievement, and also it's part of the attempt to increase the relationship between Africa and the EU through GIs. So basically, the European Union is giving African countries, and particularly the African Intellectual Property Office, the expertise to pursue, you know, the to increase the quantity of geographic indications, because I mean it's one of the big. It doesn't seem like that, but yes, it's a success story. It's like Erasmus geographic indication. It's a success story of the European Union. It's giving a lot of added value to food stuff. So the cooperation between Africa and the EU is also made through, not Benja Pepper, but through geographic indication. Geographic
a lot indication. Of weight on that pepper's shoulders.
Yeah. But let's come back to the topic of our, I said my boring stuff. I'm fine.
Classic.
I'm done for this week.
Great. Oh,
perfect.
Let's move to the fun stuff, shall we? But while, because while this pepper is the first one in Africa, it's actually not the first type of pepper to receive the protected origin status, because there's already two from two regions in Asia. So from the south of Cambodia, we have the Kampot pepper, which is also quite a fun, quite like these names, which is actually used specifically in a signature dish from the region, the Kampot pepper crab, which I'd also like to try, where crab meat is stir-fried in sweetened soy sauce with garlic and pepper.
Like I said, there's a very good Cambodian restaurant in Brazil. Really? Next time you come, Julia, we go all together.
We go and ask him.
If we can do the podcast.
She's just promised something.
We can do the podcast live from there. Also, because normally we record it either at dinner time or lunch time.
It's perfect. There's actually also a rum that's spiced with Kampot red pepper. So what we could do is go for a Kampot special.
Or we can ask the Cambodian embassy to provide us with that.
Anyway, there's actually another one from the second Asian region is from there. Well, this is a name. Wow. Okay. Oh, gosh. I'm going to...
That's why Julia didn't want to go this far.
Yeah, what did you just
now
give me?
Now you're lying.
Okay, Shimizumori region.
Shimizumori, I don't
think. Shimizumori region of Japan, which I'm definitely.
I think it's more Shimizumori.
Okay, so you're also an expert on Japanese cuisine as well as African, is that right?
I'm not saying I'm an expert on Japanese accent. It's different.
And where is this region of Japan?
In the northern part of Honshu.
And how long has it been cultivated there, Gerardo, expert on Japanese cuisine?
For almost 400 years.
My goodness. Wow, yeah. It's almost like you're reading from a script. Anyway, overall, some of the biggest producer countries for pepper include Ethiopia, Vietnam, Brazil, Indonesia, and India. So production is actually quite spread around the whole globe. But of course, Europe is an importer of pepper.
Yeah, and you can see that this fact that from a European perspective, it seems like pepper comes from places that are very far away. You can see it in a saying that we actually have in German. So when someone is really annoying or you don't like them at all, you can say, you wish they went where the pepper grows.
Wow.
So very far away.
That's a great phrase. I'm definitely going to incorporate that into life.
There's a very salty phrase in Italian.
Peppery phrase.
The peppery phrase that I cannot repeat, but I am sure our Italian listener are thinking about that.
Wow, Gerard is really chuckling to himself. It must be really dodgy.
Wow, really spicy.
Yeah, spicy in a particular part of the human body. Anyway,
okay, let's quickly move on and say that pepper is actually very popular around the world. It's the world's most traded spice, and it's also one of the spices that are most regularly used in cuisines around the world. And finally, I thought we could end today with something fun. So I brought a little riddle that I found, which is about pepper, and it was actually written by an English bishop back in the 7th century. And pepper was so valuable that it was sometimes even used as a currency.
My goodness.
So he goes, I'm black on the outside, clad in a wrinkled cover, yet within I bear a burning marrow. I season delicacies, the banquets of kings, and the luxuries of the table, both the sauces and the tenderized meats of the kitchen. But you will find me in no quality of any worth unless your bowels have been rattled by my gleaming marrow.
Wow, imagine having your bowels rattled by Jamie McMarrick.
Is that what this Italian saying is about?
Is it, Gerardo?
That's a strong end for the podcast. Wow.
So that's all from us this week. This week, the AgriFood podcast is produced by Euractiv's AgriFood team, Gerardo Fortuna, Natasha Foote, and Julia Dam, with the technical support of Abby Chiori.
You can also find this podcast on all major streaming platforms that includes Amazon, Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter so you don't miss the latest agricultural news from Euractiv's AgriFood team. I'm Gerardo Fortuna. Thanks for listening and see you next week.